This is the hack for a successful relationship.
I started feeling like I was sort of carrying a much bigger load. So we started doing regular check-ins.
I feel like I want you to like call people out.
Oh no, I'm not.
Redacted.
I'm not that bitch.
I see engaging intimately with somebody else creates almost like a whole new way of looking at him.
Never bring up birds with me again.
I feel like when there's no other interest or drama in life, then sometimes your relationship becomes the drama.
Soak it up. Soak it up, hoes.
Hi, I'm Dee Salmon, and what's been keeping me up at night is the fact that I think everything is written by AI now. Yep, I'm saying it.
Yes.
Sorry, I can't unsee it. Every single thing I see in my feed now,
yep.
Captions, the grid post with all the titles.
Dare we say it, even published even works? Print?
Just saying.
Print media?
I feel like there is like, it's kind of like Simish, but for AI, I feel like there's a language that you can tell now straight away, and I can't. It's like cognitive bias. I can't unsee it. I'm like, that's AI.
Yeah,
that phrasing is AI.
There's a couple of tells. Once you find the pattern, you can kind of start to see it. But then again, aren't you sort of thinking that AI is becoming so powerful and so good that we're gonna not even know because it's gonna keep learning?
I don't think it's, but it hasn't gotten to that place yet because I can pick it straight away. Mm. That girl I sent you the other day, who will not be named, has a whole Substack, and I'm not even kidding, she's gone viral, right? Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of followers. Every single Substack is written by AI. I would go to court for that.
Yeah, okay. Because it's where you go, you hear or you read, and it's got that kind of cadence, that pace, and it's like, it's not this, it's this or that. Or just really heavy on like metaphors.
There's a phrase. It's just a phrasing that I absolutely spot now.
Okay.
Straight away because I've seen it so much in my feed that I just know.
I feel like I want you to like call people out.
Oh, no, I'm not.
Redacted.
I'm not that bitch.
No!
No.
Hi, I'm Pip Rasmussen, and what's keeping me up at night is my new hair. My new haircut.
Okay. Tell everyone who can't see you right now.
Sorry for anyone who's listening, but I'll give you the visual. I used to have dead straight hair and now it's curly because I got a perm.
Yes, she did.
Yes. Perms are back.
What happened last night?
Well, I couldn't sleep because I woke up at like 2 a.m. and I felt my hair because I was like, haha, curls. And then I was like, it's flat. It's straight. Oh my God. The curl has gone. Maybe my hair can't handle the perm. And I started to freak out about it. And then I just was Googling all these things. And I was like, what did I do wrong? And then I was like, no, it is the children who are wrong. It's not me. Like, I didn't do it. And then I messaged my hairdresser and she was like.
At 2 a.m.?
No, I waited till 7 a.m. They replied straight away, which was very cool and professional. But yeah, they were literally like, oh, you can actually wet it. Which is weird because the normal perm rule, if you've ever seen Legally Blonde, hello, is that you have to wait like 48 hours, two days before you wet it. And that's what I thought. And then she was like, no, you just can't shampoo it, but you can wet it. And so then I put some water in it, scrunched it up. Curl girls know I've got a routine. I've got to develop a routine. So now my perm is back. Thank God.
The curls are back, ladies and gentlemen. So thank God.
Thank God.
She's ready for Europe. This will be the last time you'll be hearing from Pip for about 6 weeks.
Soak it up. Soak it up, hoes, because I'm going to be gone.
Watch this on YouTube or Spotify because you're going to miss her. You're going to miss her. But no, we will be having some incredible guests filling in. So stay tuned for that. But
big shoes to fill.
No,
I'm kidding. They're going to be great.
I was like, let people still want to listen, babe. It's going to be amazing.
No, it's actually good. The guests that we're getting are fabulous.
Oh, like, yeah.
I'm actually really excited.
Like a bit
for
of
you.
A sneak peek. Like if you're a massive fan of Book Talk. Just saying.
That's all we'll say.
No, let's get into this episode today. Mm. If you are tuning in for the first time ever, we talk about love, sex, dating, and relationships. And this year, Pip, we've done a lot of episodes on love. We've kind of been exploring the history of romantic love. We've been chatting to experts about your brain and what happens when you're in love. And something that I think is a bit of a misconception is the fact that like love is easy, right? Like when you are in love with someone, you just, that's your person, you're in love and that's it. But what we do know is that you can easily fall into like a place of love where you're just a bit of a companion love. You're like just two people who are like together in a long-term relationship, but that honeymoon phase can absolutely die out really quickly.
Oh, it dries up. And so we thought we should take a look at some of the hacks that you have to keep that relationship thriving, not only surviving, but like happy, healthy, fun, loving, because you do actually need to work at it, right? And it's like an intentional thing. So that's what this episode is all about. We are finding out your hacks, tips, tricks, rules, methods. Some of you very strategic with the things that you do to keep the romance alive. Yeah. So
as well as the research, we're going to unpack what all the experts are saying. If you want to have that passionate love throughout your long-term relationship for years, you're going to find out in this app.
Yeah. So like we just said, having a great relationship takes work and it's about being intentional. And so much of the research in this area of love, sex, dating and relationships focuses on this. Take Bill Doherty, for example. He's a professor of marriage and family therapy at the University of Minnesota. And this is something that he says is really important to have a strategy to stay happy. It's about being intentional. And Harvard University researchers agree. They really stress how rituals are a really great way to do this, which is something that we're going to get deep into in this relationship.
It is.
So yeah, they found out that couples who are really deliberate about engaging in these things like rituals and hacks are feeling more satisfied and invested and committed to their relationships. And they say that rituals are actually a very powerful commitment device. They help people establish a sense of who they are as a couple. And sometimes these couples can be protective of these special moments, even if they are kind of like mundane, because the activity represents so much and it translates into higher relationship satisfaction. We'll pop a little thing up on the screen here, but they did some research on couples. And as you can see, the ritual people scoring great. So in commitment, 7.7 as opposed to 6. Investment, 7.3 as opposed to 5.3. These are the people with no rituals. And then the ritual people, 6.9 in satisfaction as opposed to 5.3.
That's actually huge.
Yeah, so that's like a pretty big difference here.
All right, well, I think now let's get into some of the DMs we got from you hearing. Because every relationship, this is the thing that I love about this show, is like when we actually hear from you, you think that like you should be doing things a certain way. And then you hear from someone and you're like, oh my God, that's amazing. I want to add that into my life.
Yeah.
And we had so many of you send through some amazing intentional habits and rituals that you do. Alyssa saying a non-negotiable in our relationship is putting phones down at the dinner table. I love this. She said literally eye contact and looking at each other, connecting and talking without any digital distraction or screen. And Sarah as well saying good morning text to each other, but in our own stupid language.
Oh my God, I do this.
Okay, I have never done this before in my life. What do you mean?
I feel like people will listen to this and some people will be like, ew, disgusting. Like, that's so cringe. But I do this like variation of Goob Mormon or Goob Bourbon or like every different way that you can say good morning, but you add like a B into it.
So every morning you text your partner and you say a different version of Goob Mormon.
Goob Bourbon or Boob Mormon. Like, you can just go for it. It's so funny. I like it. And it's a ritual. We do it every morning.
Every morning?
Yeah.
And so does he just say a different version back?
Yes.
Or does he say the same version?
Sometimes the same. Sometimes we switch it up and try and get creative with it.
That is really cute.
And that's love.
I guess when you live with your partner, you can't really do that.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is nice. Ty messaged us and said, we always make each other breakfast before work on Fridays. It's a nice ritual to bookend the week and chat about how the week was and what we want to do on the weekend.
Oh, I love that. My partner and I always, I mean, not always, but when we have a weekend free, we always go and get a matcha together. That's a little ritual. It's like we walk to one of our local cafes and we sit down and we do the Wordle and we do the mini and we do connections.
Yeah, I love that.
And we have our little matches. Well, he doesn't. I have my matcha.
I was like, is he a matcha guy?
No, he's a long black.
Yeah.
But, you know, he indulges me with my matcha obsession.
Yeah.
And it's so nice. It's like, despite how busy our weeks are, because most of the time they are really, really hectic, we know that at some point we'll have a moment where we can just like take a breath, connect over a drink, a bev.
Yeah, exactly. So many people relate to that. Sean actually sent us a voice memo about connecting over a certain type of food. This is what he had to say.
My girlfriend has an appointment once a fortnight. Even though I can't always drive her to it, I make a point of making time to drive her from the appointment, and that time will include us going to Nando's for lunch. I'll go in and order it and I'll bring it back to the car, and either we'll sit and eat or we'll start driving. During the time that we're driving, we use that time to catch each other up on what's been going on or share music with each other. I realized that this is actually like a really good way to structure in a relationship check-in.
We're going to talk about relationship check-ins a little bit later in this episode, but I really love the ritual around the food, but also the sharing music. This is my tip for if you live together and you're not going to do the good morning text. Me and my partner, we haven't done it for a little while. And this is making me realize, oh, we need to do this again. But a ritual of playing a morning song. And the morning song is like the song that sets the day. It can be like silly, it can be funny, or it can be a song that you really want your partner to hear that you're really loving. It was like so awesome. Just like putting on the speaker and just going,
I love that.
Let's do morning song. Or like, I really want to play morning song tomorrow, so I'm doing it first. You
That's
know what I mean?
That's really cute.
Yeah, it's really nice.
This is the thing. It's like life can be so monotonous, especially if you live together. And like, I don't know, I think at the moment, like things are pretty, not depressing, but you know, like people are struggling. It's tough. Like there's a lot of shit news out there. And so if there's like a moment of joy that you can create, like just doing something silly or fun with your partner in your day and make that a little ritual to get excited for. Like sometimes I get excited just for like the breakfast I'm going to have. Do you know what I mean? Like, have you ever had that the night before and you're like, oh my God, I know I'm going to have this really yum breakfast. And so you get excited about that. Like,
oh yeah.
It's so nice that you can have like a song or have like a ritual that you can get excited about with your partner. And what was really interesting was, yeah, in that Harvard research that you were talking about, the ritual or activity itself didn't really matter. It was more about how the couple viewed it together, right? Like if you knew that this was going to be a regular thing, a regular action, whether that's like making coffee for a partner or a regular date night, it's not about the activity. Because for someone that might just be like, oh, well, that's just, we always just have dinner together, or we always have a coffee together.
We always play a song to each other.
Yeah. It's more about how you frame it. So rather than it being like a routine, if you frame it as a couple, as something that's a really meaningful ritual, you're more likely to have a more satisfactory relationship.
Yeah. You have to apply that meaning. It has to become special to you. And again, like what we're saying, it's like you got to be intentional with it, which is where intentional date nights come in, because so many of you told us this is something that you really work towards. Like Grace, we do monthly intentional date nights and we alternate who plans it, which I love, by the way. That's nice. We want to make sure that both people are equally contributing to
this. My best friend does this.
Oh, yeah.
They take turns. It's really cute.
Yeah.
And I always ask her, I'll be like, where's he taking you tonight? Or like, what have you organized? And it's like, they've been together for like 3 years. Mm. And it's so nice they're still doing that.
Yeah. I feel like a monthly one is a good amount of time too. It's not like weekly. I think that's too much pressure. But a monthly one is like, yeah, you always have something a little to look forward to. And you take some time to research and figure out what they might really like. Sam says he and his partner live together. So every date night, he asks new questions he's never asked before. Now, we're big fans of we're not really stranger cards, you know, like that's something, a great way, like a hack to bring into your relationship and get to know somebody in a way that you never thought you would.
Research shows like never just assume you know your partner entirely. Like you will have a deeper, more meaningful relationship if you are constantly curious, right? If you're like asking new questions and you're still getting to know them. Sometimes when you're together for a lot of years, you do just get into the mundaneness of like asking, you know, just the normal things about like, how was your day? Or like,
or your favorite, what's your favorite color?
What's your favorite color? Like, but I really like this from Sam of being like trying to surprise your partner with new questions that you might never have asked them.
Can I actually put you onto a TikTok creator who is really good at this?
Yes.
Okay. So I've been seeing this chick online. I don't know her user, but I can find you her because I saved it. But she literally does this Siri called Partner Questions You've Probably Never Heard Before. And they're really, really weird questions. Take a look at this.
Partner questions that you've probably never heard before. Who's the best at using the phonetic alphabet accurately? Who would be the most upset if they had to write with a pen that they didn't like the feel of? Who feels the strongest emotional attachment to inanimate objects?
See, like these are fun questions.
And they're really fun.
In her comments, people are like, I do this religiously with my partner or my friends. And it's just fun. I really love that.
It's so good. So the Gottman Institute, which is a research center that we're going to be quoting quite a bit in this episode, they basically study long-term relationships and relationship satisfaction, and they came up with a 777 rule. And this basically means that you should be planning some sort of connective thing with your partner every 7 days, every 7 weeks, and every 7 months.
Okay.
And that could be like in every 7 days, you do something together. Every 7 weeks, you do an overnighter, and every 7 months, you do some sort of holiday together.
I feel bad because I literally just said a date night every 7 days, too much pressure. But I guess it doesn't have to be a
date night.
You could just be like, hey, Let's take the dog for a special walk I found.
Yeah.
You know, that's like a bit different or something.
Like, or even a go out and get a coffee. It's about the intention, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I really liked that. It's like a way to, I guess for some people, they like having structure, right? And so if you think of 777, that's a good way to be like, okay,
yeah,
make sure every 7 weeks we're doing an overnighter somewhere.
Yeah.
Or, you know, even, and like, cost of living. Like, I get it. Like, being able to do a holiday every 7 months can be really hard.
Yeah.
But like, what if you just did like a camping weekend?
Mm.
Or what if you did an overnighter? Like, yeah, like just find, I guess, interesting ways to still do it cheaply.
I'm sure there are so many different creative ways. And I hope everyone's taking notes on these hacks, by the way, because they are fabulous. Let's move on to hobbies, because a lot of you did say that you like to do something with your partner that's like an activity and that really brings you closer together. Jai is saying we go surfing together wherever we can. It's a nice distraction being out in the waves, no phone, no distractions. It's even nice when there's silence between us, because just being together is everything and it feels like kind of a reset, which is
that's really cute.
So nice. Definitely a theme here with people being like anti-phones, which I kind of love. Speaking of technology though, gaming was a huge one that people told us about, and this is what Isabel told us.
My fiance and I have been playing Animal Crossing since the start of our relationship. It just gives us time to sort of focus on our islands and then trade like really cool things from each other's islands, or we'll play Resident Evil. Total change up. I wouldn't play it, she would play it, so I would sit there shitting myself while we play it. I swear by it. It's a healthy way for us to both think of puzzles and just communicate as a team and not have our phones on each other.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
I don't know if you remember, Pete, it was at the very start of the year, but we did that episode around how to deal if your partner is addicted to their phone.
Oh, yeah.
And I spoke to Professor Dr. Michelle Druin, and I remember, because it's just stuck with me, and I think about it all the time now when I'm on the couch with my partner, but she said that research shows if you and your partner are on separate screens, you're actually more likely to disconnect. But if you and your partner are watching the same screen, you're more likely to have like a connected relationship. So yeah, maybe you're gaming together or you're watching a movie together.
Mm.
But if you are sitting on the couch or in bed and you're scrolling different screens, you're actually doing your relationship a disservice.
Which I found really interesting. Yeah, I think the scrolling definitely makes sense. I don't know if you've ever played Animal Crossing. They are separate screens, but the fact that you're playing the same game and you're like giving each other gifts through like your islands and visiting each other.
You're like still in the same world.
It's still the same world.
You're not in like different algorithms.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm such a big fan of that game. And like, I definitely connected with like previous partners and friends over it. It was awesome. So good. Jesse here saying we play backgammon together every night to reconnect after a day of work/parenting. Alex, morning Wordle and nighttime games keeps us close and strong. Yeah, again, like these are small kind of but significant rituals, like the Harvard research is saying. They have so much symbolic meaning and it is teamwork, like I was saying. I also like do like a Saturday quiz time and stuff with my partner like every week, and that is a ritual. And it's like maybe the one, I mean, there's plenty of other times we come together, but it's like, you know, bit of fun banter. You're always like opposing each other, but this is like where we work together as a team and it's like really fun to like be on the team together.
I love that.
Yeah.
I think we should talk about relationship check-ins.
Yes.
And you are going to love this DM. Bridget said, we have monthly check-ins and it's actually inspired by your hookup episode on this topic.
Oh.
I inspired myself.
Wrap it up. Podcast
Seriously?
Is done. We did it.
We've done our job.
We inspired somebody.
Taxpayers worth it.
That's awesome.
No, I literally, when we did this episode about relationship check-ins, I think we'd both kind of heard about it for the first time. And I have now brought that into my relationship.
Yeah.
And I just love it. I love that other people have listened and done the same. Frey is saying, my partner and I do a weekly 10-minute relationship check-in and it's been a game changer.
We also got a voice memo from Alex who told us about their Sunday check-in, and it wasn't the perfect thing straight away. Like, they kind of had to work at it. And this is what she said.
My partner and I started doing check-ins regularly. I started feeling like I was the one that was bringing all of the bigger, heavy lifting conversations. And I started feeling like I was sort of carrying a much bigger load. So we started doing regular check-ins without any planned structure around it. We just kind of said, okay, every Sunday we would do a check-in. And then that ended up kind of backfiring to begin with, because then every Sunday became something to stress about. And then we found this template. Essentially, it's supposed to be like 10-15 minute, like super short. The first couple of minutes you're talking about something that you're grateful to your partner for from the past week. After that, it's what do you need more support with in the coming week or in general? The third part is any issues that have come up in the last week that need clearing. The final part is just week ahead overview. We've found that by doing it in this way, that's focusing on the last week and then the week ahead, it almost sets you up to like address small things in advance. It's also really nice throughout the week, if something comes up that rubs you up the wrong way, to know that, okay, like if now is not the time to bring this up, we can talk about it during the Sunday check-in. We're able to ask for what we need much easier. And it's something that we really look forward to as like a little ritual.
Love.
Yeah.
I totally get what Alex means about like having to really try and convince your partner, not saying that this is my experience, but when we did that episode, there were so many people that were like, it felt a bit gendered, like women who were dating men, they were like, I feel like I'm the one who's constantly having the relationship check-ins and wanting to do the relationship maintenance of us as a couple. Mm. And I just think it's really interesting because like, yeah, what do you do when your hack isn't being reciprocated, right? Like when it feels like a bit of a chore, like obviously Alex and her partner are now like loving it, but when you know that this is going to be for the better of the relationship and you know that it's going to be for the best for both of you, but you feel like you're the one who is being a bit of a drag or like a bit of a mom and like you're the person who's like trying to force this on a partner when you know that it's actually for the good of the relationship like we're talking about.
Yeah, I think with the relationship check-in hack, that's such a specific problem to that potentially, because having a morning song or doing your hobby together like surfing, like that's fun. Who doesn't want to do that? But this is like, this is actually like hard work, and it kind of goes down that path of like, this is a serious relationship building and maintenance thing. And I kind of wanted to know like what your thoughts are in terms of like, do you then compromise? Like, how do you find a way to, like, do you have to compromise? Like, do you have to meet in the middle somewhere? Like, if you're like, I really want to do this relationship check-in, and let's say you're dating someone and they're like, it's really not important to me, or I express myself differently. Like, how do you deal with that? Do you have to meet in the middle, or does a relationship hack always have to be like equal and reciprocal? That's what I'm wondering.
I think you just have to find ways to meet in the middle a little bit. Like I think if it's in the example of the relationship check-in, I think if you're coming from a place of like, this is for the better of our relationship and this is going to like bring us closer and this is something that it's really important to me. Like I think I've seen it on like fucking Dr. Phil or something stupid. But like, oh, actually maybe it's Brené Brown. But they talk about like naming your, like this is a 10 for me, right? Yeah. So like something might be a 10 for you and it's a 2 for your partner. Mm. But if something is a 10 for them and it's a 2 for you, then you could move up to being like a bit of a 5. Like you meet in the middle.
Because if it's so important to them, you'd be like, oh, well, that's, to meet them there.
It's a 10 for them. Like it's a 2 for me, so it's not that big of a deal. So I'll meet them with what's important to them. So I think it's about kind of describing like, this is really important to me and it's really important for us. And then finding a way to make it happen that suits both of you, I guess. Like if someone is someone who struggles with like, you know, vulnerable conversations or something being like a specific time every week that they just, that doesn't work for them. Or, you know, you just find ways to work around the things that they find difficult with that quote unquote check-in or whatever it is, the ritual that you want to do with your partner.
Yeah.
But I do think that like there will have to be a combo of like compromise but also enthusiasm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, hey, we're both in this.
Yeah.
We both want this relationship to work. So like we both need to bring that energy.
Yeah. I kind of thought that I was more on the it has to be equal and reciprocal kind of team of it. But like when we got a lot of people messaging us talking about like surprising gifts and things like that. And I'm like, that's such a specific love language. And maybe somebody is just never going to be able to meet you there. Cause like, you know, when you date someone and they're like, I don't really care for like material things. And you're like, yeah, but I really like, you know, receiving like flowers or gifts or whatever it is. It's like, you might never be able to compromise on that. And then you might also need to reassess and be like, okay, I'm okay if I don't receive it, but I like to give it, or like, you know what I mean? Like reassess.
Such a great point.
Like, or reframe how you feel about
totally.
It.
Totally. Yeah. It's so true. I think love languages, even though they're not that real, are an important thing to talk about because like you said, Pete, like someone could be like a huge gift giver and that's their way of like their hack for their relationship to keep it, you know, doing really well and thriving. Mm. But then the other person might be like, I'm just not a gift giver, but I care about quality time and phones down at dinner. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, for a lot of you, gift giving and like really intentional, thoughtful gifts was a huge one. And that's what Calandra told us.
I'm an artist and I love drawing my partners and my friends. It's a really nice thing to do together when we're feeling not so social or we don't want to talk too much. I sit down and I'll draw him, or I'll draw like with him or around him. He loves it. It's a lovely way for him to see himself through my eyes. You're not often drawn, and it's a nice way to connect with people.
That's such an underrated hack to create something physical, and that's such an outpouring of love. And of course, that would maintain a relationship and make you feel loved. Calandra actually, like, we checked and we were like, can we show this drawing? Like, oh, it was so beautiful. You'll see it up on the screen, or you can have a look at it on YouTube or Spotify. But to describe it, it's like this beautiful black and white, like three panel, almost like a comic book. And she's like lying on his chest and her hair's like falling down, and then it like turns into a waterfall. It's stunning.
So cool.
And I just imagine, like, yeah, how beautiful it would be to receive that. Scooby also sent us a voice memo talking about how they love gifts.
I like to get my boyfriend flowers because I think guys should get flowers too. He's got some for me before and I was like, oh, that rocks. Everyone should get to experience that. Or if I'm like, I don't know, at a market and I see a cute plushie of a weird creature he likes, I'll just like surprise him. Or if money's tight, I'll send him a photo so he knows I'm thinking of him anyway. And we both keep each other's like favorite treats at our houses, which is just, I don't know, it's really nice and homey and it makes you feel welcomed, I guess. Sometimes I leave little notes at his house where he knows he'll find it later, and or he'll get me like a book from my Goodreads want to read list. Just little things that show we're like actively listening to one another. It's nice.
That's it. The intentional thing. Like, it's about going above and beyond. Like, him going, I'll go through her Goodreads and find what she wants.
So nice.
Oh my God. Like, that is awesome.
But the thing is like, I know sometimes it can feel overwhelming. Like, you're not a gift giver, or like, you don't have the money or whatever. But like they said, it can literally just be a note. This is the thing. Sometimes the most meaningful, thoughtful things you can do is just like a little note that you leave for someone saying like, I love you, or something really sweet.
Mm.
And that can make someone's day, and that can make you feel closer.
Yeah, like the photo of the thing that you didn't want to buy, but you were like, I thought of you.
I thought of you.
I feel like I do that all the time. I'm literally a photo of something. It would be something big and small. I'll be like, us. And it's like, I'm just thinking of you. Like, it's so fun.
It's so nice. Yeah. And this reminds me of another Gottman study from the Gottman Institute. This is quite a famous one, so you probably heard of it, but they basically did this massive research into studying newlyweds that was called the Love Lab, where they observed everyday interactions and followed up with them 6 years later. They divided the couples into two groups. There was the masters, the couples who were still happily married, and the disasters, a bit mean, couples who had divorced or remained together in unhappiness. And basically what they found was the difference whether your relationship thrived or didn't survive was how they responded to something called emotional bids. So the masters, the couples that were still happily together, turned towards their partner's bids 86% of the time. The disasters only turned towards their partner's bids 33% of the time.
Am I correct in thinking that if I'm going to TikTokify this,
yeah,
this is people who are talking about bird theory, right?
It could, yeah, it's like anything. It's like, oh my God, look at that incredible bird.
Yes. So it's like, oh my God, the bird. And if the partner is like, yeah, whatever. Anyway, so back to me, or directs the conversation elsewhere, the bid is lost for the attention. But
yeah,
the partners who are then going, oh my God, wow, that bird is amazing. Let's talk about it. Like, it looks like this. 100%.
So they broke it down into three different bids.
Right.
Or three different reactions. So the turning away is the just ignoring, or like being preoccupied, staring at a phone, not responding. The turning against is actually being like, you're fucking embarrassing.
So like
the actual irritability, the hostility, the dismissing of it entirely. And then there's obviously the turning towards, which is like engaging, acknowledging, validating. And that is what creates the emotional trust and emotional intimacy over time. And they said consistently missing or rejecting bids leads to an accumulation of resentment and distance, ultimately causing relationships to deteriorate.
Okay. Yeah, I love this, and I know that I've heard people talk about this in relation to the bird thing. Imagine seeing a bird and being like, never bring up birds with me again to your partner. Like, okay, why are you dating?
But you see couples like, and like, you know, it's a pretty, sometimes it could just be like, oh my God, look at that thing, or oh my God, look at this photo.
Mm.
And it's so, it actually does feel like a massive rejection.
Yeah, kind of.
Even though it's small.
Comes across as micro, but it does have a massive impact.
Yeah. Because it's like your partner just being like, ugh, you're so annoying. Yeah. Or ignoring you when you're trying to like, it's like a, it's not about the photo. It's about the gesture of being like, I'm trying to ask for some sort of connection or intimacy in this moment.
Yeah. Some more research that we found as well is all around practicing gratitude. So they found that couples who regularly show appreciation report higher satisfaction and commitment, are significantly less likely to divorce, and are better buffered against outside stresses like financial strain or ineffective arguing. And this is something that so many of you messaged us about. Cara saying, I make sure I say something I'm grateful for in my partner every day, or at least compliment them every day. Tim said, my partner and I say, I love you throughout the day, which is small but meaningful. And Bella, before we go to sleep every night, we say things that we're grateful for.
It's so nice. Yeah. I do think that, yeah, sometimes, especially if you live together, like your relationship can end up being like, who's cooking dinner? Who's taking out the trash? Have we done this? We need to get back to this. We need to do this admin. We need to clean this. Like so much of your relationship can just become chores. But even in that, you can be like, thank you so much for doing the dishes. Thank you so much for doing the washing. Thank you so much for cleaning that thing. Or thank you so much for thinking about that.
Mm.
And like that's practicing gratitude, right? It's like,
yeah,
just acknowledging, because otherwise like resentment does kind of build.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been doing this show for a long time, and something that like a lot of people talk to us about is how to deal with the mundane when you're in a long-term relationship. And we know from research that having something novel and surprising can really break up and disrupt like those patterns in a good way. And so many studies have actually found that if you as a couple try new and exciting things together, you actually get a stronger bond, you have more passion in your relationship, more satisfaction than couples who do just like kind of tend to stay in the routine. So a 2000 study in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology surveyed and tested couples who'd been together from anywhere between 2 months to 15 years. And they found that people who took part in quote unquote novel activity or arousing activities, that's not just like sexual, that's like,
yeah,
you know, excitement,
stimulating.
Yes, like stimulating. Yeah, arousing, I'm like, in this context doesn't make sense. But they reported having really great relationship quality and increased passion. The thing that this research found is that this actually showed up after doing a task together or an activity together that lasted 7 minutes. So you can do something novel and exciting for 7 minutes with your partner and it will have a really good long-term effect.
I love that, because I think every time I hear someone talk about like exciting, blah, 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 I'm like, great, so I'm going to have to go into a fucking roller coaster.
Fuck, I have to go
skydiving.
I'm going
to have to go to a fucking theme park.
God damn it,
I'm
I don't
have
time
to play
for
some
this.
Sort of fucking clown game shit. Like, I escape don't have time
room.
For this. Escape room. It's like, no, you could actually just do a new game.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You could go to a new cafe together, a new restaurant.
Something novel
something
and exciting.
Something new. Exciting. No, I love this. And I think this kind of goes hand in hand with what we hear from a lot from Esther Perel. So Esther is famously known for talking about the need in long-term relationships to obviously have security, but balance that out with the desire for novelty, what she calls the erotic. She emphasizes that desire thrives on space, curiosity, playfulness, rather than the mundane predictability of daily domestic life, kind of what Pete was saying. So she really, really vouches for the fact that you should have a partner that still remains a mystery to you. Instead of assuming that you know everything about them, she wants you to ask open-ended questions and approach them with a fresh and playful curiosity, no matter how long you've been together.
Oh my God. The mystery for me is so hard. I'm like, oh, I talk too much. I'm not a mystery
to
anybody.
You can't even just sit there on the corner being like all quiet and moody.
No, like you know that meme that's like when there's a lull in conversation and you start talking about your trauma just to keep the conversation going?
Me. You're like, that's, yeah.
Fuck.
Because I'm like, your partner's quite mysterious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's got the mystery down pat.
I think like historically for me, I'm like the yapper and my partners have always been like the listeners.
The mysterious
one. Slightly more mysterious.
Well, maybe you only need one person to be mysterious.
That's true.
And this was something that we heard from you as well. Like sex and intimacy and changing things up was really important to keeping that satisfaction and connection in your relationship. Shay saying we shower together every single day.
Yep. Aaron saying every Friday without fail, we always have epic sexy time. Sets the tone for the weekend. And Tom saying, basic, but I constantly tell my wife she has a hot ass. It's so true. It helps. We've been together for 15 years. Yeah, I mean, I have friends who use like the dice, like, you know, you can have those or like different cards to bring on different positions. Even people who just love going out to the sex toy shop and buying a bunch of new toys and testing them out.
Absolutely. And like, I've got friends that go to sex clubs, you know, I've got friends that just like also have opened up their relationship. Mm. And that's something that we heard from Evie. Her and her partner Axel are in the adult industry, and being in a relationship where they can play with others is actually something that they've said is so beneficial to their relationship, because there's a lot of trust and great communication that goes into it, and it actually helps them see each other in new lights.
Having experiences with other people, it just gives that polarity. Seeing that kind of that contrasting difference, or seeing your partner from the outside, and it almost separates you, like, you know, polarity, the polarity of separation, and enables you to kind of see them from a different perspective. So I see Axel engaging intimately with somebody else, and it creates almost like a whole new way of looking at him. And it takes away that, I guess, the sameness. You know, people fall into patterns in relationships. They live together, work together, do housework, and they kind of merge. Whereas when you're engaging intimately with other people and you're seeing your partner do that, it creates this contrast that allows you to see them entirely as an individual.
So we've been hearing so many great ideas and hacks for time together, which really does help bond, maintain a relationship, and keep you thriving. But so many of you were like, I actually think my hack is time apart and keeping a couple of things separate in the relationship, which I really understand, and we're going to get into it. Nina said having our own friends, interests, and hobbies is really healthy. And another example is Kat, who actually voice memoed us and said that she and her partner keep their finances separate, and she reckons that's a really great hack for them.
I think one of the best things we did transitioning from best mates into a romantic relationship was maintaining independence, and that included financial independence. We've been together for 9 years now and have always kept our finances mostly separate. We have a joint bills account and a joint savings, but we both get paid into our own individual accounts, which ultimately gives us the freedom to save and spend however we want.
I'm a teacher and he's self-employed, and I made it clear when we first got together that I want to maximize my holidays to travel and do things, and he would always be welcome to join me, but if he couldn't take the time off work, wasn't interested, or couldn't afford it, then I'd still go without him. We're quite different and enjoy spending our money on different things, and that just works for us. But people are often quite critical of that. We've been married for 2 years now, and I'm often asked, why do I bother when it's all technically legally joint now anyway? Or some even ask if I'm worried that I can't essentially track his spending to check whether he's gambling or going to the pub for lunch or subscribing to OnlyFans. But honestly, if you're worried about those things, why are you even in a relationship with them? It's about trust, honesty, and communication. We have a house together, so it's not like we don't have joint financial responsibilities, but ultimately our current setup works for us, and it gives us the freedom to enjoy our lives as a couple and as individuals. If we decide to have kids, maybe we'll reevaluate, but I can't ever imagine a time when all our money is going into a shared account.
How interesting.
I thought that was the norm.
Yeah, I feel like it kind of is, but I mean, I've had partners where we've opened up like
everything
joint
together?
But we've all had it, like, we've obviously...
Yeah, I'm like, everyone's got their
separate... Everyone's got their own things, like, not all in.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point of that. You can still have such a conjoined life. You can live together, you can own a house, you can have kids, blah, blah, blah. But that life outside of the relationship is so important. And this was something that Tara sent us a voice memo about.
I've found in the past that when all I'm thinking about and all I'm working towards is a relationship or a potential relationship, that's when things tend to go awry. Whereas when I have my own life and my own goals, my own hobbies, work, then we can come together and support each other. I feel like when there's no other interest or drama in life, then sometimes your relationship becomes the drama.
Oh, we've heard this before.
I love that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure Alexis Fernandez said it on an episode we did with her around that if you are someone who is used to the roller coaster of relationships and you have like a type that's always like hot and cold and you're with someone now who's finally secure and normal, like you need to find drama outside of your relationship because otherwise you'll cause it in the relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. We also had David who got in touch as well talking about, and maybe this is like the love language thing, different ways that he and his partner like to spend different time apart.
Myself and my partner, we have what I would call planned time apart. It's something that we do weekly. I go out to the pub and maintain my social circles with my friends. My partner is more of a homebody. He enjoys sitting at home and watching TV. So it kind of started largely because when we met, I was a fairly social person and he was not. So it's something that we do just to make sure that our relationship is happy and we're not in each other's faces all the time.
Maybe this is where the compromise part comes in, like we were talking about earlier. Like, do you have to reciprocate everything? No, their compromise is like, I'm social, you're not very much, and we can go our separate ways and that's fine and come back together. Another big one was Katie sending us through a voice memo talking about having separate beds. And I think so many people will relate to this and be like, this is the hack for a successful relationship.
Taking the pressure off sleeping in the same bed or that we have to do it all the time has been a game changer for us and has helped our relationship a lot. Our sleep, especially for my partner, who is the light sleeper, has improved, and we put in more time to the ritual of getting ready for bed and saying goodnight, as well as getting ready in the mornings. We definitely feel more connected, and yeah, it's nice to have a little bit of time apart, especially when sleep is so important.
You know how I feel about this.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
How many times have we sat down in these chairs and you've talked about, we literally said, what keeps us up at night? D's up every night.
Yeah. Normalize separate bedrooms.
I know. It's honestly like, if you can afford to do it, it genuinely feels like so many people.
And if you can't, get your partner on a blow-up mattress on the floor.
And it feels like, exactly. I feel like people are really ashamed to admit it too. And they're like, well, we actually sleep in separate beds. And
oh, I'm
like,
it's so
let's
wild.
Just talk about it. Like, it's actually so
wild.
Normal.
The shame is crazy.
It is crazy.
No, I think we've learned so much, Pip, from so many people. And like we said at the start of this app, like everyone has their own tips, tricks, rituals, and it's so amazing to hear how different they are. But I think there's a real theme, right, that's kind of stood out from this episode and what all the research shows. It's like time apart, intentional habits.
I'd say intentional for me was like
intentional
bullsh.
Time apart, intentional habits and rituals.
Applying the symbolic meaning. Like,
symbolic meaning.
Like really going like making it a big deal, even if it is just a silly morning to good morning. Good morning. So even if it is that, apply that meaning to it and make it special.
Be curious about your partner. Ask questions.
Be a bit whimsical. God forbid.
There's the novelty. Do new things together.
That's right.
Gratitude. Beads for affection.
Mm-hmm.
Time apart.
I love it. I think that was it.
That was it. Anyway.
Thank you so much to everyone who contributed to this. We so appreciate you and we hope you learned something. If you were listening and going, I should try out this hack. But that's what we're here to do. But
yes.
Yeah.
And DM us as well. Like if the relationship check-in episode changed your life. We want to know if this one did as well.
Please do. We love that. All right. We'll see you in the DMs.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.